Hey everybody, lots of interesting stuff in store for you on this week's Shop Talk Show! Things like, you're starting to sell ads on a website. What kind of things do you need to consider? Actually, lots of stuff. We have somebody in a situation where they just don't have as much control over the workflow they use at work as they would like. We're going to talk about agile development. What is it? What is it different from? Is it the future? Is it the past? What are the alternatives to it? A lot of stuff to think about there. We're talking about like changes to website. At what point does it require like a complete redesign? Is that the right way to think about it? We talk about APIs a little bit. Like, let's say you publish a new video on Facebook. Is there a way to kind of automatically move that over to WordPress? What are some things to think about? Of course, we're going to talk about naming things. How could we not? We're going to get to all that really quick on Shop Talk Show. I want to mention that this particular episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by CodePen. Which is an app that I work on, and I've been working on it forever, and we have a whole team of smart people who work on for you, and it's amazing, and the primary way that we operate at CodePen is you signing up for pro plans. You get a ton of stuff when you upgrade to pro on CodePen. Big features like uploading files and keeping your work private and live view for testing and theming and all kinds of awesome stuff. And there's lots of little tiny things you get for upgrading to pro. Like, I don't know, if you use our SMS feature for sending pens to devices for easier testing, you get so many of those, you'll never run out if you're on pro. You don't see ads is one of the things. You get a little bit of juice in our popularity algorithm. You can use a pen as the header of the background of your profile. You get a little tiny badge next to your name that says pro. There's a few other little tiny things too. Pro perks is when you get discounts on other software and stuff when you sign up for it. Lots of big things when you sign up for CodePen Pro, and that's codepen.io/pro, and lots of little tiny things too. So we'd appreciate you signing up for that. For now, Mr. Dave, please kick things off.
Hey everybody, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast all about mouth bass. I'm Dave Rupert, with me is Chris Coyer.
Oh, that's right. We are here with another rapid fire. You longtime listeners know we've been doing a lot of these in a row, but we are in development on some new episodes, actually, some new territory for Shop Talk Show. So look forward to that next year. For now, though, let's do as many questions as we possibly can and do everybody's favorite thing where we get right into it. So we have one here from, or unless you have errata, Dave? Or?
No, we probably messed up, but I can't remember. So therefore we didn't, and I'm going to take the Trumpian notion that we did nothing wrong if I can't remember it. So go ahead.
Just locker room talk. Charlie Walter writes in, hey dudes, what are your views regarding code layout, variable names, specifically abbreviations, and the general maintainability of type things? Nowadays, I never put abbreviations in my code. For the next guy, it's much easier to pick up. And even for me, maybe he's the next guy months later, because, you know, we have minification tools now. I see no reason to other than less typing, to have abbreviations or acronyms for things. He says he even dislikes BTN in Bootstrap because it's an abbreviation of button. Why not just say button? However, sometimes I get stuck trying to name variables as I want to be clever about it and use less full words and stuff like that. We could probably stop at that for now. What do are you offended by BTN, or like at what point is too far too far? You wouldn't use just .b, right? That's like definitely not enough.
That's definitely not. So BTN, I use it, but I'm actually very inconsistent between BTN and button, like when I move project to project. So I kind of vacillate, and that is not good. I wish I was more consistent. I think when it's like when I'm doing button class button, oh man, does that feel like you failed or what? I don't know. And then it's like, usually, you know, if you're doing like BEM style things, you're like button, class button space button __primary_button, you know, like it starts like cascading it very, 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 very repetitive. So, I think the shorthand for the like super common classes is probably good, or like hyper extendy classes. I'm inventing, I'm mouth blogging right now, but the kind of classes where you know you're going to have a lot of mutations, I feel like being kind of shorthand is fine, as long as, and the big caveat here is, as long as it makes sense to you and your team, like, right? Like, it could be in Japanese, it could be in Chinese, it doesn't, like, it could be anything, as long as it makes sense to you and your team.
Right. Right. I would say that abbreviating for at the cost of understandability is never worth it. You know, if you're like, oh, we're only going to use three letters because that's more efficient as it traverses the pipes of the internet, not good enough. Well, you know,
and like Atomic CSS is like, we're going to abbreviate everything. This is BPXT, you know, and whatever that is. You know?
Right. And they don't have to do that. They just, the examples tend to do that.
Right, because it just gets super verbose if you like.
Yeah, there's a lot of There's a lot of class names at work in that environment. So
I've been working with this unnamed, unreleased style guide that I have like for a client, and I'm not doing that style guide. I'm just like working with it, so I'm inheriting it. I'm on the bottom end of that waterfall, and they do things like they'll have kind of, they have prefixes so that it's M- for like a module. So like if it's a module, it starts with M-. And then if they have a C-, that's a context, you know, or like kind of like a modifier. Like this is a C- paragraph 3, like a, you know, mid-sized paragraph. If they have an F-, which is like a feature, but it's sort of like this one has a large icon, this one has a small image, this one has, you know, kind of like these different features, or and then they also have, you know, theme- for themes, and they also have they used to have like P- and X- and those are kind of like the X- are kind of the like,
kind of makes sense to me. It's a little bit BEM-y, but it's just like, it's a naming convention that they invented in which to name space concepts together, which I don't entirely dislike that, you know.
It's good, but it also like working with it like day in, day out for a few months now, it adds a little bit of confusion. But I think overall it's good. But there have been times I'm just like, hold on, I don't understand. Like I have to like take a break, think about it, like kind of plot what they're trying to say. Like I have to translate. Does that make sense? It doesn't feel like,
because if you need English to make a new thing, are you like, okay, is this a context or is it a theme, or is it, because you've obviously thought this out. I don't want to like use the incorrect thing, because if I use the incorrect thing, it's the worst thing you can possibly do. Because why did we use any convention at all if it's just willy nilly which one you use?
Yeah. So then I like turn to my big crazy man red yarn chart on my wall, and I try to figure out which, you know, prefix do I need to use? I'm like, oh, okay.
See, I could see that hurting in that case, but you know, maybe understandability later is worth the initial confusion. I'm not sure. When I thought of this, I'm like, you know what? I've been writing CSS the same way for so long. I wonder if it's time for me to, I don't know, flip the table on myself and try to do something differently. But, you know, day to day, what I do is like, if I need a new thing, I think of what I would call it, and then I call it that. And I usually just, for whatever reason, go all lowercase and dash separate the stuff in it. Be like, oh, this is like a user dropdown. So I'm going to call it .user-dropdown. And that's just what I call it. And then it's not a theme, it's not a component, it's not anything. It's just that chunk and whatever. I named it that. And then I style it. You know, like I just don't have a big fancy system where everything is and it, you know, it's not just me anymore. writing this. So I used to caveat stuff like that. Like, well, I only write CSS for myself, so it doesn't matter. Like, if it makes sense to me, it's fine. But now there's some more of a team of people interacting, at least four, with the same CSS, if not more, and it's fine. We all just kind of like, I don't know, just call it something and then style it. And I'm not saying that that's the perfect system, because I don't know, maybe 3 years from now we'll be like, oh crap, now, you know, we should have had something, because now we're scared to delete stuff or whatever. But it's never been a big problem. Just name the damn
Like, how big is the CSS on like CodePen? Is it
not massive? Absolutely not a problem.
See, that's the other thing, is like, when is it a problem, you know?
It's a problem when you've lost grasp of what the heck is going on anymore. I think that's scary. If there's a lot of like employee turnover or something like that, I could see that being like a bigger deal.
And I've had like refactoring issues, like with my own CSS. Like I go in and I'm like, want to like clean it up or something, and I'm just like, what did I do? I was just making things up very badly, you know?
This is insane. It's 20 kilobytes. All of it.
See, that's kind of amazing for like a whole app, right?
Squished it all together. I think that's the mistake we're making right now, is that so long I've been doing that, like, let's split up into fairly logical things. Like, for example, you go to the homepage of CodePen, it loads global. The biggest chunk of CSS is global. But then I'm like, well, I'm going to have this concept called page, which is all the CSS that's like a page on CodePen that isn't like the edit. It's not like part of the app. It's like, I don't know, oh, whatever. It makes sense in my mind what page is. But then I'm like, oh, there's styles just for the homepage too. So remember I had that old post 1, 2, or 3. It kind of follows that. It's like everywhere and then subsection of the site and then the individual page itself. But I'm like, these CSS files are so tiny, they should just all be smashed together into one big old thing probably.
I wonder, because you have a constant header on CodePen. I wonder if you could inline that and like include it in the head. Just compile that out and include it. I bet it would get a lot faster. And then, so then like
20K in the head, maybe.
Well, just the like header stripe, like the, that part.
It's actually, it's kind of consistent, but it is actually different once you go into the editor.
Oh, okay.
So maybe though. I like, you know, I still have this. I've never shipped production critical CSS. I've played with it, but I've never actually done it.
Get on it. Feel the juice flowing through you. Oh man.
Whoa.
And then watch everything rearrange itself just before your eyes while you wait for some weird piece of JavaScript to execute.
Oh my God.
It's a beautiful future.
I'm scared of it. That's why it's so, God, you got to be so careful if you're Google, just telling the whole world that you only get 99 out of 100 because you didn't do this one weird thing. That anyway,
it's like 80 out of 100, but yeah.
80? Oh, so we really jumped weirdly on this particular question. But Charlie, I would say definitely don't abbreviate things at the cost of confusing anybody, even yourself. So.
Good advice. Next, John McClanahan writes in, I'm working with a client who would like to have a post type on their WordPress site that lists live videos from their Facebook page without reinventing the wheel. Is there already a dynamic way to import that content? I did find this plugin, Facebook Video Embed, but you still have to manually enter each URL of the videos. I know this is a relatively new feature for Facebook, and this may be the best case scenario for now. Thanks for the help. This is interesting. I don't know enough about the Facebook API. And
Key word here in this question for Josh is that when you say something like, I want to grab the most recent X from the site X and display them on site Y, that's an API. There's an API at work there, you know.
Right. You need Facebook to send you some kind of JSON that...
Or more like your WordPress site needs to ask for it.
Yeah, your WordPress site needs to ask Facebook for the video.json. And I don't know if they offer it. So that's the kind of question is, does Facebook offer that? And then how do you get that? And you usually probably have to like apply for an API key. You have to, that has to be based on the user. So you'd need like your client's login to their Facebook, which is very unsecured to do, but you'd need that to generate an API key to then like start siphoning things into your site. Now, and then you'd have to like build.
And it sounds like he says, I want to have a post type. So it's the deal is like when this API detects that a new video has been posted, you want to create like a permanent level of content. And that's a little unusual too, in that usually API content is just like digested and used on the fly, but doesn't generate like a database level artifact of itself, you know?
Yeah, because if you do the database artifact level, you know, what if something happens, a problem? Oh no, we said something wrong in the video. We have to delete the video and re-upload the video. Now you have two videos on your website because you every time a new video shows up, you do some kind of like database write on your WordPress site. So now you have to keep these feeds in sync. So what most people do is just do some kind of consumption, you know, some sort of JavaScript consumption of that API.
Right. It's because it's like, oh, show my recent tweets. Oh, put this div on the page, hit the API, get the tweets, display them there. And I know that's changed over the years because even Twitter doesn't like love you doing that. But that's like a pretty common API usage, regardless of what we're talking about. That's trivial. And all of a sudden, now we're talking about, well, I want to get those. Let's just keep using tweets as an example. But I want to make a WordPress post for each individual tweet. That's all of a sudden you've leapt from fairly trivial API integration to like extremely complicated API integration, because you need to, you know, be looking for those tweets, matching up, not add making a new post every time you hit it. You have to be like, oh, we already have a post for that one. Oh, but it's changed, so I need to update the post now because data has changed in it. Tricky, 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 tricky. So it's like, Josh, I guess if it kind of sounds like hopefully maybe you can just make a widget kind of thing where you hit the API, look for the videos that are recent and just drop them on the page somewhere, just kind of as transient information, and literally probably look into WordPress transients too. I know I'm mixed words there a little bit, but it's actually a feature of WordPress that makes hitting that API a lot more efficient. I don't know. Creating a post for every new Facebook video posted seems like kind of tricky territory, and I'd maybe avoid it if you can.
Yeah. I'm trying to. So they do have a live video API, but what's weird too is, you know, Facebook, it's in Facebook's interest to keep you on Facebook. So I'm just trying to see if they like offer you ways to siphon this into your website. You know, they are very good at, they want you to post to their system, but in terms of like getting things out, it's really not super clear.
Yeah, you make a strong point here, Dave. This starts at what do they offer as an API at all?
Mm-hmm.
And Josh, you did also mention that, you know, you get a URL for each of these videos, and the thing that you're trying to avoid, I guess, is grabbing the URL for each video and pasting it manually into the WordPress site. Like if that works, that, you know, I know that's not what you want to do, but it may be kind of the easiest way through here.
Right. The best solution is the low tech solution.
Right.
You know, like, right. Like you could spend thousands of dollars like developing out a Facebook
really
siphon.
You could have just pasted a URL. And
Right. And then like, then you have no flubs. Like you don't accidentally post whatever, a picture of your kid on your your like,
oh yeah,
client's,
you get a
website.
Little free human curation out of it as well.
So I'm over at developers.facebook.com/docs/videos.
Have you ever seen the show Superstore?
No.
Pretty funny. It's like these employees that work at like a Walmart kind of thing, but it's like a joke sitcom. I just said the word curate, and there's one episode where he's like, you're not allowed to say that. And he's like, you said I could say the word curate one time a day, and this is the time I used to say it.
That's good. Like, I like, we had that at a recent job, but with bespoke. You can only say bespoke once a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would love to limit the world to saying bespoke once a week, let's say.
once a week. All right, next. Hopefully we helped you out, Josh. And if anyone is looking, like, has this solution and who's built this solution and open source this solution and, you know,
yeah,
like,
maybe we're a way off. Maybe this is easy. Were you like, whatever, yeah. Chris and Dave, that stuff's easy. I program that stuff every day.
Cool. Yeah.
Open source it. Let's see it.
All right.
Go on.
Anonymous writes in.
Have you ever felt bad about a website?
Okay. Anonymous writes in. Have you ever felt bad about a website you have designed when it's too late to fix? Dun, dun, dun. I'm a junior front-end developer, and I take pride in what I do, but I also work with clients and their budgets, so I can't scrap a website I'm not happy with. Why would I want to redesign an ongoing project, you may ask? Revisions from the client will often change the design so drastically that the original flow, spacing, button, font, size, whatever, no longer works as well as intended, making it tempting to often and often smart to redesign from the site from the ground up with these changes in mind. Okay, introduce consistency. Should I not bend over so easily and argue against their suggestions more, or should I just suck it up and implement their wishes in better ways? I feel like these arguments are often won by how high up the person saying it is, but by subjective likes and dislikes and not analytics and data. Late revisions often require drastic changes to the code base structure as well, making the rewrite even more tempting.
This seems like, it seems like, not to be rude or whatever, but I guess I have to be. It's kind of a junior level question to be asking in a way. And I think that the longer you're doing this kind of thing, that the less you think in this way. You're like, oh, they asked me to make the button purple instead or bigger instead, so I have to make these drastic changes, and I might as well redesign the entire website. You know, that seems a little extreme there. You know, there's probably ways that you could have built the site to begin with to be a little bit more malleable to stuff like that. If they're asking for bad changes, hopefully you know, there's project managers to temper that kind of thing. And I don't know. It just seems like, so some people asked for some changes to the website and you think they're bad, but have to do them anyway. And then because you had to do them anyway, you want to rebuild the entire site. It just seems a little like, I don't know.
So I think I think it is like somewhat of a valid question, just because you have, you know, it's like, if you change 10 things, is it even the thing it was? But I think what's helped me, Dave Rupert, sort of deal with this emotionally, don't get so emotionally invested in websites. That's step one for a long life. And then two, that I started seeing an understanding, I think, that web design is a team sport. Very, very, like, rarely is it I do it and it is perfect and I ship it and it's perfect. You know, in a beautiful world, that would be true. That like a designer's true intention could like survive it. But, you know, there are, you know, just at every step, the website is actually made of people and people's decisions in the organization, you know, and if it's an organization where the higher up person, the highest paid person, the hippo, is that right? What we call them? The highest paid person has terrible design senses and then has this weird, like, I have to change things just because, you know, or I don't like green. So therefore no green on the website. Like that is, you know, in a sense, you might be like, well, green is really good. It's the color of money. People click more, you know, they want more money, you know, but the website is not a technical feat. It is not just a design feat. It's made up of people. And so when these people collide, that's kind of, you just have to kind of make do. And I think one thing that Anonymous said here is, should I suck it up and implement their wishes in better ways? I think that's the key, is like, take feedback, be like, okay, cool. I'm just trying to understand, like, let me, like, you said make the button purple, but let me like ask a question above that. Why purple? Is it just because you like it, or is there something you're trying to achieve here? I have, you know, you could say I have a lot of experience here and I just, you know, I worry about purple buttons, but what can we sort of try to get to the essence of the ask? Oh gosh, I said the ask, Chris. So try to get to the essence of the ask and then implement it.
Sure.
in the best way possible.
I think maybe these situations are set up because the groundwork was off to begin with. You know, I think of like really professional designers working with client and they've set this situation up in which that they're like, no, you hired me. I'm the designer and I you're paying me good money to make these choices. And I did it. And there was a process and we went through it and we've made this design system. And I explained every step of the choices that we made. And it's like, it'll never come up that some random person's just like, get rid of the green. And if it does, everybody will just have a good laugh because they just are clearly just swooping, pooping on this thing, but like it's almost safe to ignore because all these things have been talked up. You know, it's been explained. There's a lot of because being used and whatever. Like things aren't as fragile as it seems like that this question was framing, you know? And then there's this another thing that it reminds me of is that like thing that I feel like Paul Boag was like known for talking about and being like, I don't know, if the highest paid person in charge wants the damn button green, make it green. You're in the client services business and websites aren't that precious to begin with. And if it gets you paid and it gets people happy and they want a damn button green, make it green, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your design system might fall apart, but I mean, you kind of just figure it out. I would say, I think you also, one other card you can play, strategy card, is you can, the late revisions thing, like, oh, let's make all the buttons purple on the whole website. You know, you can say like, I can absolutely do that. It's going to take X amount of time. It's like going to take 2 weeks to, why would it take 2 weeks to fix buttons? You could, but it's going to take like 2 weeks to do all this work you've suggested. And so that pushes our launch date back. So now you have a consequence for this late game, you know, late decision and a billable consequence, hopefully, like based on your contract. So I think that's the thing too, is like people can ask, but like you have to kind of like explain like, well, asking things this late takes time. So we'll have to adjust. We'll have to adjust the schedule. And that's something people pay attention to. It's like, well, maybe if it's going to take 2 weeks to make purple buttons, I don't actually want this. I would rather have a website. So be surprised.
Nice pause for some potential advertising action.
Hopefully people are just sending money right now.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by CodePen. CodePen has pro plans, and you get a lot for being pro on CodePen. One thing, you know, probably our most popular pro feature is that you get private pens, an unlimited amount of them, and not just pens, but posts and collections as well, and they all kind of work together. Keep your stuff private. You get a bunch of additional features like, for example, collab mode, and we hear from people that they use that to hire people sometimes. They'll get two people in a collab mode, both the interviewer and the interviewee, and just see how they work. They can watch in real time, which gives you a lot of insight into how someone, you know, is as a coder. So it's kind of cool that way. But you could use it for anything, figuring out a problem with a friend or using it in an education setting. Speaking of education, there's professor mode, which is a way for you to type and kind of blast that out. And other people can watch you code in real time. Live view is also a real-time thing. It's like as you code, you can have open a preview of what you're coding on unlimited number of devices, and it will update as you code. So like the CodePen editor itself, but you have it open, you know, on your phone and your iPad and your Samsung Galaxy Note 7 that's on fire or whatever. You can upload files, just drag and drop. You don't see ads. There's just tons of stuff that you get from Pro I'd also like to underscore the fact that if you sign up for Pro, that will be your plan. You'll be kind of grandfathered into that pricing forever. I know I've alluded to that before, but every day it gets closer to us potentially changing prices, and you might as well get it for the cheapest you're ever going to get it. Not to mention when we release new Pro features, which we have lots and lots of plans for, you'll get those Pro features on your current plan. So signing up for Pro is a good idea on CodePen. I'd like to extend one additional offer to everybody who signs up for Pro. And reminder, you can be Pro, you can be Super Pro, or you can set up a team account, which is, we call them Pro Teams because there's a team owner and they distribute Pro accounts to a group of people. If you're any of those and you work at a company and you are hiring, you know, we have a Shop Talk Show job board. It's also the CodePen job board. It's also the CSS Tricks job board. You get a lot of coverage that way. If you're Pro or Super Pro or you're on a Pro team for your company, just email me at chris@codepen.io. I'll give you a free job posting if you're hiring so you can, get a little audience for that job post you're out. It's an absolutely free offer. If you're Pro or have a team account or you're Super Pro, just email me at chris@codepen.io and I'll hook you up with a free job posting, which is worth a bunch of bucks. So just an additional offer for you all. Patrick Kate writes in, "Hi guys, agile development seems to be a pretty standard practice in web software development. I was wondering though, if you both could share your experiences with it, do you think it will continue to be popular? Or if there's pitfalls it doesn't address?" I would add to that, I wonder, is it as temperamental as the, you know, the libraries that we use? Is how we work so much? I don't think so. But you know what? I'd be hard-pressed to even define agile these days. Anyways, I feel like it is thrown around there a lot, but I don't know that anybody – I think everybody practices their own version of it. I think these days companies just work however they want to work, you know? It's just agile, just loose to me, and I'm sure I'm wrong because I'm wrong about everything. It just kind of means, I don't know, we push code more often than once a month. I think that's basically what agile means.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think agile means anything. Like the definition has like been so watered down. It's like we do a little stand up, we do some Scrum, we have a Jira, like that is, we're agile, right? I thought it'd be good to kind of visit, go back to the roots, Chris, and read the Agile Manifesto, the Manifesto for Agile Software Development. It's like 10 words.
Please do.
A dramatic reading of agilemanifesto.org. Manifesto for Agile Software Development. We are uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. Through this work, we have come to value individuals and interactions over process and tools. Working software over comprehensive documentation. Customer collaboration over contract negotiation. Responding to change over following a plan. That is, while there is value in the items on the right, we value the items on the left more.
And then the background of it is six white men standing in a circle.
Pointing avidly at a whiteboard. So
I don't mean to make fun of it because the world has decided that agile is actually pretty cool and useful and stuff. But yeah, it's like even on the Agile Manifesto, it doesn't really define exactly what it is because there's words that are attached to like that people assume, right? They're like, oh, agile, that means you do Scrum, right? That means you do sprints, right? Aren't those things like foundationally part of it?
Yeah, well, I think like Scrum would be like a mutation of Agile, kind of focusing on the like you herd together and plan and then you go out and, you know, you have Scrum Masters, you have, you know, Kanbans, those come into play. Just those are like all tools for practicing Agile. I've heard of this new one called Less, which is kind of a cool structure. I think like Spotify uses it. So you have like your teams, like your, you know, product A, product B, product C, or like let's say feature A, feature B, feature C. And then, you know, you'll have like one, you know, front end web developer, one back end web developer, one iOS dev or something. And then like you kind of picture those in columns, right? And then you have like guilds, which kind of go across like sideways. And so all the front end people are in this front end guild, all the iOS people are in an iOS guild. And that kind of keeps like, I think that's cool. It's kind of like,
it sounds cool. You know, it's you'd have to live it to know how it actually works.
Yeah, you'd have to live it, but it just sounds, it's kind of neat. Like, I don't know. You have like, I've been playing a lot of D&D or like I just started playing D&D. It's kind of like that. It's like, oh, I'm a rogue arcane trickster. So I do these things. So I'm going to hang out and talk to rogue arcane tricksters and pick up some rogue arcane trickster tricks or wizard tricks or something. I like that. I like these kind of guild mentality. I like you don't need, I don't know, because in the waterfall, this is, I feel, a problem with agile, quote unquote, agile things too, is it just takes waterfall and kind of like tries to tighten that loop. And I still don't like that, where there's like a management team that makes all the business decisions. And then there's like a front end or a design team that makes all the design, and then the development team that does all the development. And it's just this like that like waterfall handoff, but it's supposed to be agile or something that I don't like. I don't like that brand of agile. I feel like that kind of you discover problems late in the game, like device limitations or, you know, technology limitations. Your tech stack may be super ill-equipped for this, you know, business plan that somebody came up with. So, you know, I think, so I identify with the Agile Manifesto, where it's like responding to change over following a plan. I think that's really great. So,
yeah, I'd say most people are thumbs up on the idea. And it was I'm sure I have the history wrong, but isn't it? It was like basically Agile is a reaction to waterfall, right? Waterfall's the one everybody doesn't like. Waterfall's the like management decides and then it moves down the pipe to like wireframes. Like
assembly line.
Yeah, like, right. And then it goes out and it never goes back up the pipe, you know, or whatever, which is seems a little silly.
Yeah, I feel like that's just you hand problems to the next person on the assembly line. You never hand solutions. So
evolution of that? Are you saying that, like, I don't know, that this agile is, my theory is that it kind of has lost some meaning and it just means like some mutation of working quickly and involving lots of people and stuff.
Yeah, I think now it just means like,
what would be something that's totally not that? What would be something that we wouldn't refer to as either waterfall or agile? Can you like even imagine a different possible situation?
No, not off the top of my head. I mean, you could get into like organizational hierarchies, like holacracy. Is that a thing? Like the old, how GitHub used to be run with no managers and stuff like that. So it's just basically like, I heard this is how GitHub used to work. It was like, okay, next sprint, what do you want to work on? I don't know. I like charts and graphs. Okay, do that. Like, go, man. Be, you know, right.
Empower yourself. Yeah, but in your situation, there was somebody who just gave the thumbs up right there. In some situations, you don't even need that. You need the thumbs up. You just
right,
do it.
Right. I think you just kind of.
And then you sprinkle a little continuous integration and continuous deployment in there, and then things get really futuristic and weird, you know?
Yeah. That's what's interesting, too, is that working software over comprehensive documentation. I would almost value both of those equally. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. I think you'd need to document, but if you write tests, is that comprehensive documentation? Is that,
well, and then who enforces those tests? You know, I would think, you know, the most important thing is that there's people at the organization, whether they're officially that's their role or not, they behave like a connector, a manager, a project leader, you know, somebody who, you know, is looking over and making sure that they have kind of a vision for what's happening and they can connect people and make sure nobody's lost and make sure that there's some vision being executed, you know?
See, I think that's like crucial. So often there's all these management strategies and blah, 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 and all these tools, you know, like whatever production tools or and it's trying to like replace talking to people, you know, like, and I'm just like, no, talk, like everyone should talk like all the time, like chat rooms, talking, everyone should talk like all the, just offer up any sort of random thought. Like, I guess as long as it's related to something and not just noise.
And then talking, the way that you actually ship the software at the end becomes self-evident, I think.
Right. Well, kind of back to the anonymous question about how, you know, what do I do? You know, I think it comes down to like websites are made of people and people should talk. You know, software is people. It's not just bits and bytes. It's people's decisions and stuff. So you have to like talk things out. You have to listen. That's like the other part of talking that people often miss. So you have to listen. It's tough. I think those problems are almost harder to, harder than the technical problems. And I was talking to a friend recently who moved into management at his company. He's a developer, 15 something years. And he was just like, you know, I made the decision to be a manager. And I was like, that's super interesting. Cause like why? That sounds like the bad part. But he was just like, you know, I like helping people. I like helping my teammates try to like do all the minutia. You know, I'd rather like have that win than a software win. So I think that's cool. So anyway, hopefully that are we, I don't know. So do you think, let's answer the question, Chris, do you think Agile will continue to be popular, or are there pitfalls it doesn't address?
Well, do I think the absolutely nebulous definition of Agile, meaning anything that isn't waterfall, will continue? Yes, I do.
Yeah. If you're struggling with it, I would almost put pressure on your organization to define it, right? Like this is our brand of Agile. Like, don't just let it be like a catch-all phrase for however we want to do things, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that there's things like, you know, sprints, right? Sprints were designed to like cut up things into chunks, like 2 weeks, just go for it. Like try to solve the problem.
Let's do this. I got this next question works right into it. So it'll segue in there. And this is from another anonymous person saying that, and I'll just read it. We are essentially stuck working in a 2012 web development environment, cowboy coding, because we have people in other departments who work on the websites we build and maintain that are not technically savvy enough to work locally and push changes to the live server. So they do work on the site, but they're not like on version control or whatever. We have SEO and PPC departments that write blog posts and add scripts through a tag manager. To the sites we maintain who have almost no web development knowledge at all. You can see my dilemma. I'm striving to just do things like use a CSS preprocessor like SAS to set up some grunt tasks for my work project, but it's impossible with the workflow we're using right now because of how many different departments are involved. I'd like to start implementing more of a modern web development workflow, but I don't think my boss will listen to reason. How do I propel an entire company's workflow toward when I have no influence over the future of the company? So that does sound frustrating. Can we tell if this company is that enough information to know if they're agile or not?
I mean, I think every company thinks they're agile. Can we assume that Dave's as a baseline? Law. Dave's law. Every company thinks they're doing agile. I mean, in a world where, I mean, you should be able to introduce things like SAS, I would say, or Grunt. I mean, but it's sort of up to you maybe to learn those technologies and demonstrate how they will save time in the long run. You know, I think every person has, you know, that, you know,
it does seem interesting. Like, if we dissect this a little bit, it's like, okay, you have a department that writes blog posts. Well, that's probably a CMS in which probably doesn't require code deployment necessarily, or
probably not a lot of changes.
And if there is deployment in regard there, is there some kind of way that could happen that, I don't know, that you would push it or something? And then you said, okay, well, you have a SEO department or a PPC department or whatever, and they use a tag manager for scripts. The whole point of a tag manager is that it can be be managed without having to a code department deploy code. So it seems like that's literally the whole point of a tag manager.
Yeah. So some are more manual. Like you have to like go like this link, I have to go in and add this tag or something. But if somebody does that's their job and they should be able to do that right through the CMS or I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it also strikes me as like, if you really feel like you have absolutely no say in this, then that's actually kind of a different project. That's just a different problem. The problem is people don't listen to you or don't like your ideas or whatever. Like there's some infrastructural problem at the company in which that you don't feel particularly listened to or valued. And I can't dig into that without knowing more. You know, and maybe it is time to find something else because you clearly have some ambition and ways that you want to be using more advanced tools or whatever. So,
yeah, I think head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and browse around because it's not hard to find companies that are doing this kind of modern web development stuff. That said, I think you have to have a conversation with your boss, just like, hey, look, like we are falling behind. Like,
and you can't roll in there and just say, we gotta use SaaS. SaaS is the thing to use. We have to use it. I can't believe we're not using SaaS. That's not making an argument. That's just saying what you want. The argument is, why again do we need this SaaS thing? Make an argument that we have problems with consistency that SaaS will help solve because we can use things like variables. You can say, oh, remember when we had that bug that, Flexbox wasn't working properly? Well, that was my mistake, but it's a mistake that nobody will ever have to make if I get to implement auto prefixer into our workflow because it will just take care of all kinds of problems like that for us. What about, I can automate some things to make our website faster that it won't take hardly any time at all. I can put it into the build process. And here's a study that shows that faster websites make more money, should come in with some ammo rather than just being like, nobody listens to me. SaaS is the best. And I can't believe we don't use it. This place sucks. Isn't an argument, an argument is an argument.
Yeah. I mean, if you have like an SEO department, and it's tough, but like if you're like, oh, hi, I have something that affects SEO, like page speed or like maintainable, super fast CSS and, things like that. Like that's probably better than like a 1% gain on organic click through PPC traffic or whatever. Like just making the site faster might be better. So like, you might just need to say like, hey, I think we need tooling for this. Like you can set up perf budgets. You can set up like automated whatever, like testing of your, like page speed index, all of that. Like you can kind of
there's
monitor
articles
things
that where Google says
tools.
Speed is factored into SEO, period. Here's the article. And if you show that and say, I have a plan to make our site faster, here's how I would do it. Here's the proof that it's going to matter. And they're still just like, you don't know what you're talking about. Then it's new job time, or then it's like, okay, now I am in like a toxic kind of place.
And here's just spend 4 hours, like just rolling out Grunt into a project, like on a fork branch. And then just like, show how like smaller things get and how tidy and how good and how like just do Grunt, set up Grunt for 4 hours and like just start showing like and then you have some data like, oh, it actually like when I compare the A/B, like I speed test on 3G on with a throttled CPU on my machine, it's this fast, but when I use Grunt and munch things all together and down, it's this fast. And then just see what happens. See what happens. You'd be surprised. They might like this happens in companies all the time, but like they might throw you a bone just to keep you happy. And that's great. Squeaky wheels get grease. That's the unfortunate truth of organizations. Which is why we do a podcast. Next question, Jacob Harris. This one's about ads. Here we go. I'm the front-end dev for a content site that's about to start selling and serving its own ads, both banner ads and native advertising content. Do you have any pointers for me? I think Chris mentioned serving his own ads on CSS Tricks before. Just wondering if you have any advice or know of any pitfalls I should look out for. Thanks.
So Jacob Harris is looking to start serving ads on his site. So congratulations. I actually think that's awesome. It's like you have something that you want to start making some money on. Advertising is one of the, I think, you know, it can be a very honest way to make money online. I honestly think that I've written about it a couple of times before. I can put those links in the show notes. But what do you have to think about when you do that? I don't know. One of the things I think of is kind of doing it early, I don't know what point the site is in its life cycle for you, Jacob, but it's kind of like having ads from the get-go feels a little bit more fair to the people reading it not to just have it be free for 2 years and then all of a sudden get bombarded in ads. It's just, even if there's nothing necessarily unfair about that, people don't like it.
It won't go well. Can I tell a story? I use Overcast for my, and I want to support Marco. It's a really cool, app, but like, he added a thing. It's like, go premium, and it's on every page of this app, you know? And it's like, oh man, like I was using it for free and I think I already paid you like $7 or something. Why do I have to look at this thing now? It's a bummer when it comes later, right? Like ads show up later. And then we on Shop Talk, we purposefully like started out with like a 2-ad principle, right? So we made a conscious decision here to like carve out room for ads. And hopefully no one skips over them. But I think it's important to think about that, right? I was just underscoring what you just said. Sorry, Chris.
No. That was better.
I think it is important. You sell a lot of ads on CSS Tricks.
So well, not a lot. I also think it's also slightly weird timing for it, and that it's not like there was a time when the banner ad ruled the world, and that's a long time ago now. And, you know, there was a time where people actually made good money doing that, and it's not gone, but it's way leveled out. And that if your plan is banner ads, there's nothing wrong with that. You might as well get in on that a little bit, but they don't do as awesomely as they once did. There's not as much money in them or whatever, but it's, you know, you got some real estate on the site, go for it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so native advertising, I assume that's like content advertising.
Probably. I do. Like, I do both of on CSS Tricks. Right. And you'd even call this advertising that we do in this show native advertising. Like we occasionally play a little backbeat and do some advertising, you know, and it's not.
Yeah. Interesting story. I feel like I should tell everyone. I actually don't own a computer. I've never used a computer. I'm a Media Temple employee full time. No, I'm just kidding. This is tough. I run ads on my site.
I suspect you were approached, right? They're like, hey, you should throw this little tiny piece of JavaScript on your site and it'll make a little ad there and you'll make some money.
Yeah. I was approached by like Fusion Ads. And that then got bought by Carbon Ads, which has been bought by Buy-Sell Ads, I think. So it's like, I've been shuffled around, but it makes me like $9 a month, and I don't have serious traffic, 10,000 hits max maybe a month or so, but I make like $10 a month, and for me the ads do two things. It kind of incentivizes me to keep writing a little bit, just kind of like, oh yeah, like I'm not doing it for nothing, you know, when you're doing it for nothing. I think like it's really hard to get back on the blogging horse, but it is. But I also like selfishly, like I'm interested in the effect of third party, you know, content on websites. And so my ads are third party. My comments are third party. I'm that's actually a very intentional decision on my part, not just because I use Jekyll, but, like I want to know how these third party things and how to work around them. So that was like an intentional decision. So, so I will keep them because it's kind of like a challenge. Like I can have the fastest website in the world if I have no third party JavaScript, but introducing that is like a challenge. So I like it.
Jake is asking about other things to think about. Like you were saying, Dave, you put them on there on purpose so that you can think about their effect on the performance of your site. And because there's so many other people in the world that think about that, you know, why not have a little forced empathy for them by having some on your own site, I guess. Yeah, definitely the performance is a thing. It's not the hardest thing in the world to make async advertising these days. A lot of it is just async by default, and that's almost pretty much the answer for it. You should also think about like, what is that moment like when they pop in? Because that can be obnoxious, because that can reflow and stuff like that. So that's a thing to think about. There's responsive design is a thing to think about. How well do they are they nice and flexible and stuff? Do they fit where you want them to go and resize and stuff? Can you force them to be through your own ways and means?
Well, and there's also like the classic, like, do you want the one tiny tasteful ad, or do you want just Banner Town, you know, USA? And that's a decision you have to make. I like,
and that's one. A dial. It's not one or the other. But it's true that you know, you can go almost, you know, here's an example that probably isn't too obnoxious or whatever. Go to Dribbble. Dribbble has one ad. They use the deck, and that's mandatory that there is only the deck ad on the thing. It's way down in the footer, and it's just this tiny little thing in the corner. Do you think that blasts a lot of clicks for them? I mean, maybe because Dribbble is super highly trafficked that they probably do a little bit okay on that, but it's not nearly as good as if they decided, okay, I'm gonna put that deck ad actually up in the grid of shots on Dribbble. Just I can integrate it in there nicely or whatever. That would do a lot better, but they've chosen not to do that for whatever internal business reason or UX reason or whatever. That's a choice, you know, or they could go crazy and put it up, you know, like between the main header bar and the content, a huge banner ad there. You know, it's like those are three different places on that dial, and there's a lot more notches on that dial too, how many you put there and how and stuff. And that's a very important things to think about. Like how obnoxious do you want to be? And I hate to even use the obnoxious isn't even the right word. It's like, how prominent do you want them to be? Like, where do I think I can get clicks and not piss people off?
Yeah. It's a balance. And that's what I like about it is like, how can you, I don't know, like introducing it like artificially or naturally, you're just saying like, how can I balance this? Like,
you know,
advertising.
How relevant this is that just yesterday I pushed a new branch on CodePen. And it's an experiment of sorts. Hired.com reached out to us, which is like, it's like a reverse job board. So it's not like a replacement for a job board. So I'm like, we already have a job board at CodePen. And that's the same job board as the Shop Talk Show job board here and the CSS Trick job. That's important to me. I want to keep that thing going. I think it's useful. I think there's good business. There's money to be made there. We've helped people. I want to continue to do that. But maybe we could, you know, because we don't have a ton of time to invest in it, maybe we can also supplement it with a partnership with Hired.com, which is not a job board, but a thing that you sign up for as a person, and like job offers kind of come to you. And you can sign up as an employer well, as if you want. If you're looking to hire people, you can sign up as an employer. And so it's like, okay, it's kind of like an ad, but it's really more like an affiliate program. It's like, send people to us with this special URL that has tracking parameters on it. And if somebody signs up for it, you earn X dollars. And if an employer signs up for it, you get X dollars, whatever. So the branch for me was sprinkling in these links throughout the site in a way that I thought didn't discourage people from using our job board, was honest in how it works. Sometimes there's a graphic, sometimes there's not. It's just integrated throughout the site. So it's kind of, I had to think about all that stuff we were talking about. Like, is this obnoxious? Is this cannibalistic? Is this, you know, does this fit into the design of the site? Is this on message, on brand for us? And it's just an experiment. So first is making those choices, then is rolling it out, then is tracking that data too. So I even, just because I want my own data on this, I took their URLs, and we have our kind of an internal system for it, but I was like, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to use Bitly. If you sign up for Bitly, you can just make a link and then log into that account and see how many people click the dang thing. So there's more data than click data, but it's nice to have click data too. It gives you, everything starts with a click, right? So.
Yeah, well, you got to kind of, it's interesting.
So what I could have done is put a huge hired.com banner on the top of CodePen. The day I do that is the day I retire from the web. You know, like it's just not what I want to build on the web. That's just not the place I would visit, and I don't want to be a part of that. And it's nothing against Hired. It's just like, that's not the kind of traffic I want to send you. I'd rather be honest and build a product that people like and that I'm. But I don't want to have it be so off to the side, so demure, so that nobody ever sees it and it gets no clicks at all. I want to be right in the middle.
No, I think that's the challenge. I have that globaldefense.club, the global defense I made for Shop Talk Live. And I'm thinking like, oh, it'd be nice to like wrap that up and put it in some app stores, you know, like Phone Gappy kind of thing or whatever. But then I'm like, well, but I want ads. I don't want to charge money for it because I don't necessarily, it's like not necessarily worth money, but like just a nice tasteful ad that like shows when you start a game and disappears when you start playing. I think that would be really cool. But I don't know. I need to kind of like, I need to figure that out and like that. I'm just, it's like a, how do I do it? Well, I think it's a tough question and depends on the situation.
The font hyperspace bold.
Oh man. That's some DAW fonts.
Is it
stuff, right?
And there. Did you just blast it through Font Squirrel and just load it up?
Yep. I put that. Yeah. Font Squirreled it up and it's pretty good. It's so bad. You can web inspect that and just like, type a word like with an AY like play is so bad.
Oh, it's the just thing smashes together. I see the RO and Giro is all smashed together. Weird.
It's so bad. And then like I had to, so I do like a random slug. I'm gonna change all that.
Yeah,
like
TA is rough. The T is all the way touching the ascender of the A or the tip of the A. That's wild.
I had to like blacklist, like I'm randomly generating a slug for the game, like a bit 32 in code kind of thing, and I had to like actually like remove letters because they like an O and a D and all those letters all look the same in a zero, so I had to like kill a bunch of, like I had to like cleanse my game IDs, which is dumb, but anyway, I'm actually gonna roll out some changes here. I've got like a list of like 10 things I want to do, so I just need to find time to add things. And I think I'm gonna add ads and see what happens, and then I think I'm gonna like roll it out into like Windows Store and Android and see what happens.
I saw a similar game, not entirely similar, because it was very similar. It was like go to moonlander.seb.ly. It's that Subli Delisle dude I don't think I've met.
Yeah.
But it's like, it also works. Everybody playing it is, you see their little ship too. And it's a moon landing game. So you have this little moon lander thing and you have to rotate it and blast fire out of the bottom of it in order to like slow down and land at particular parts on the screen. It's really fun. And it made me think of your game too, and that it shares some similarities. It'd be fun to package them up together and get both games.
Yeah.
It even uses the same font and the same black background and stuff.
Yeah, his is better.
This is good. I don't know.
Oh.
It is really fun.
Yeah, okay. I'm probably going to play this for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. something landed and do. All right, well, you've been listening to one full hour of the Shop Talk Show. Thank you for subscribing to this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter for 11s of tweets a month. We're at Shop Talk Show. Tweet about the show. That also helps us in our SEO social organic traffic. So we really appreciate that. If you hate your shirt, head over to shoptalkshow.com/shop. probably. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/job. Get a brand new job. Somebody recently reached out on Twitter and said, I want to donate to you monthly. And how do I do that? You know, because a lot of podcasts have monthly donations. We do not accept have a way to do that. But if you want to support Shop Talk, please actually support something like Black Girls Code or Girl the Puppet instead. We'd really appreciate that. That would be equal to receiving your bucks. So we really appreciate that. And yeah, Chris, you got anything else you'd like to add?
I'm busy playing Global Defense over here. It reminds me of the, I got to go to both Dave and I went to Disney World and Dave went to Disneyland. How random is that? And I went on the famous roller coaster Space Mountain when I was there. And it actually,
I went there too.
Did you? Oh, is there a Space Mountain in Disneyland?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. In line, at least at the Disney World one, there's games like this that you play in line so you don't get bored while you wait. And they're all like space games. Okay. That was weird. We were trying to end the show, right? ShopTalkShow.com.
Also buy Chris's book.
Yeah,
he's got a good book.
Yeah,
good, nice book.
Google Practical SVG. It has helped people and it could help you too.